1986, I believe it was, Essence magazine had a cover that was of a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Black woman. And they said on the top, "This is the face of HIV."
Hi, and welcome to the NCCHCA podcast. I'm your host, Alvin Kapitako. In this first edition of our series on HIV awareness, prevention, and treatment, I talked to the CEO of C.W. Williams Community Health Center in Charlotte.
I'm Deborah Weeks, CEO of C.W. Williams Community Health Center in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And how long have you worked at the C.W. Williams?
I had a 6-year anniversary just this past March, and looking forward to a few more years.
I asked Deborah Weeks to talk to us about the vision of C.W. Williams and whether that has since changed or expanded over the years.
We have actually gone through several stages. For very many years, for I would say more than 3 decades, there was a continual growth and flourishing of the organization and the penetration in the community. The community and C.W. Williams was very well established, the relationship that Dr. C.W. Williams himself had, and then growing beyond that to the wonderfully dedicated providers that we have and staff that provide very caring, loving service to the community. Then there was a shortfall that C.W. Williams did not do so well, and they almost closed, but never closed. And I came on board, and we've been working our way back into the embrace of the community as well as growing the services once again. I'm pleased to say this is our 40th anniversary, and on our 40th anniversary, I can, with happy and glorious hands, say we are growing, and we are starting to penetrate the community once again in a greater fashion. In fact, we have 3333 Wilkinson Boulevard, and we have our relationship with the Charlotte Housing Authority, now known as Enlivion. We are actually at a new site on 800 Clanton Road. It's part of our NAP development, our program, and we are in fact developing another site at 5800 Old Pineville Road. So we are definitely growing in the Charlotte, Mecklenburg County area and beyond. We have 2 new mobile sites. We have a medical mobile and a dental mobile, and we are very proud of that. We are, in fact, proud recipients of our new ARP monies and are looking to penetrate the community through partnership and work with partners to develop that particular grant so that we can continue to serve the community in a bigger way, in a different way. So we are also having conversations with the community as to what their needs are and what they think that how we can better serve them. And that's really important when we are establishing new programs to ensure that we have their input and guidance and direction.
I also asked her to tell me who C.W. Williams was.
He was the first Black boarded provider, doctor, MD, in both hospital systems, formerly Presbyterian Hospital, now Novant, and CMS, now Atrium. And he brought along and educated lots of other MDs that were under his tutelage, and they too worked at both hospitals and found a home here at C.W. Williams. So we had residents and interns and actual MDs who wanted to be employed here with C.W. Williams. C.W. Williams actually gave his life's blood to develop this center 45 years ago. He convened a group of other community members who are also dentists, doctors, and lay people who wanted to establish an FQHC to safeguard and protect the uninsured and the underinsured here in the Charlotte community. As you know, penetrating the hospital systems was very difficult for those who did not have an income or for those who did not have medical insurance. And through the a very difficult time in the race relationships between Black and white people of power in this area, there was nowhere for them to go. And Dr. C.W. Williams himself was often at the homes of a lot of the patients that were turned away from the hospitals, et cetera. And he himself, between being the only boarded Black physician and a surgeon and a doctor, was constantly going. He came up with the idea of making sure that an FUAC was here. He was back and forth with the people in politics at that time in Washington, D.C. They assured that we finally got the FQAC certification or accreditation at the time. And it was established in May of 1981. And 6 months after our grand opening here at 3333 Wilkinson, after a real renovation project with a prestigious firm here that donated some of their services, he died when his last son was pretty much brand new baby. So when I say he gave his life's blood to C.W. Williams, he really did give his life's blood. Prior to it being renamed to C.W. Williams Community Health Center, we were known as the Metrolina Community Health Center. A lot of our legal documents still have otherwise known as Metrolina. And that's who our esteemed Dr. C.W. Williams is. And it's interesting because people say, well, you never met him. It's as though his spirit is imbibed around this building, in this building. It's as though I often say the angels are encamped about us, and it's because of him. But his determination and severe commitment to community and ensuring the health of our people, Black, brown, and light, and anyone else who's poor, he was so committed to that, making sure that people received the same health services that anyone with insurance was able to receive. And that commitment, that passion, is what I feel like I'm responsible to imbibe and responsible to assure for this community health center.
I also asked Deborah to talk to me about what makes C.W. Williams unique as a community health center.
We look at ourselves as servants first, and I think that spirit is where the determination and the tirelessness comes from, because many of whom stay here long after work is supposed to be over. Just to continue to, like, look at COVID. This entire time at COVID, our providers, our MAs, our front desk staff, everybody are really working well over the amount of time that they have to. A lot of them could have been home remotely. Without my knowledge even, they started coming back into work. Quality of care that is delivered to our patients is a phenomenal. I mean, we provide the same service to the homeless as we provide to the working poor, as we provide to the average citizen, as we provide to the people who are well off and well esteemed. We are dedicated and committed to making sure or ensuring that every person that we serve is served equally. I think that's our strength. I think that our cultural and linguistic ability to communicate in all languages is our strength. I believe that before we even had people who spoke other than Spanish here, we made sure we had the language line and to be able to communicate with people. We have a growing Asian community. We have a growing African community. There are lots of people who are coming into Charlotte, as you know, into North Carolina in general, but into Charlotte particularly. I think Charlotte is actually growing a lot faster than any of us intended. The Charlotte that I came to 6 years ago is so very different from the Charlotte of today.
And you are doing very well in terms of HIV and AIDS. Can you talk to us about that?
Well, yeah. In fact, you know, the heart of FQACs is prevention. If we could, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure, as we all know, right? So a pound of prevention is better than an ounce of cure. I think I may be mixing it up somehow, but you know my heart. So for the most part, we are very, very committed to our HIV population. What used to happen when I first came in, I heard lots of stories that I won't bother repeat and take time for now, but we made sure that all providers were more experienced and educated in how to serve HIV, that your specialist and your ID really didn't have to be the only people seeing our HIV patients. So if they're in fact in their virals are good and in good status and they have a cold, they don't have to see the HIV specialist or the ID. They can go to your provider, right? So we did educational services. We had trainings. We had sensitivity trainings for our HIV patients, and I mean for our HIV staff, so that they can address patients differently. There was a lot of differences when I first arrived, meaning everybody was kind of compartmentalized. If you was an HIV patient, if you were this patient. No, we're a patient. You're a patient. We're a service. We are here to serve you regardless of your status. There is no prejudices and walls that all the walls are now invisible. Before, there was very much able to be seen, but they're all invisible now. So we're grateful for the invisible walls that we've created. And we pray that we continue to have those invisible walls as we educate and we get new staff. We have a huge body of new staff because of COVID. As you know, in the beginning of COVID, everybody was up in arms. Everybody was fearful. There were lots of changes happening. Parents who were only parents, whether they were male or female, had to stay home with their children. So it forced us to hire new staff. And we were fortunate to get some great new staff as well. Now we're expanding even beyond that amount of new staff. So we're looking at retention and getting our patients back, you know, making sure that they come back full speed ahead, that in fact they are here being seen because it is safer and the doors have opened and all of the categories are starting to open. We want patients to come back home, even though that there are some categories. Like this morning, I had a conversation with a couple whose parents are taking care of 95 and 96 years old, and they have declined in the last month since their first vaccine. So we have actually arranged for a provider to go to their home to give them the vaccine. And I am very happy that we can do that. I'm very happy that my providers are very willing to do that for each and every person that's available or needs it. Anybody over 90, we shouldn't be asked to or forced if they're unable to travel. You know, if you're immobile or handicapped, we're concerned that you also, if you're desirous of the vaccine, that you're able to get that vaccine. So my team, and as small as we are, because we are small compared to most health centers, they've made a way beyond their breadth and depth. I mean, they are phenomenal, and I give them a lot of credit. And they do things that other providers wouldn't necessarily do. And so they're not only doing that during COVID, they generally do that for the older population anyway, if they need an at-home care service. And one of the tips through one of our partners through NCCHCA last year mentioned in the early days of COVID what we were doing and all of that. They gave us the idea to have our CHWs go by and wave at patients just to make sure that they were okay. You know, and if they needed anything, they were informed and they would carry that back to us. So I thank my FQHC partner for that idea because that worked beautifully. And it really helped people to feel connected and not so isolated. And those that were feeling more isolated, we got them in touch with behavioral health or whatever other services they needed to make sure that they were not alone and somebody actually heard them and listened to them. And now it's important, especially for our elderly.
As you heard from Deborah, CW Williams does not discriminate against patients with HIV and AIDS.
Our HIV, along with our behavioral health services, are growing, are expanding, and we just have to keep on doing what we do to keep up with the growth.
Lastly, I asked her to talk to me about whether HIV infections have decreased in the United States over the years.
I was around HIV when it first started, or when we first experienced it in New York. I'm a New Yorker originally. So when we first experienced it in New York in the early 80s or mid 80s, it was phenomenal. It was tremendous. It was hard. You know, I think very similar emotionally and psychologically to what COVID did in the beginning. You know, everybody was overwhelmed. People were frightened. Nobody knew what to do. People were not given funerals or even there was no such thing as Zoom. So they were thrown away, essentially. People were dying left and right all around us. They were isolated. There were wings of the hospital. I worked with New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation at that time, and there were wings of the hospitals that it could only have one person, and it took up the entire wing, and it was shut down and isolated and protected and everything else. It was a very frightening time, and the numbers of providers and nurses that did not want to touch that patient, that's what kind of pulled at your heartstring. But those that did want to work with them pulled at your heartstring even greater. Why I talk about the original days? Because there was so much education, information, growth, medication changes that occurred in a very short period of time for the first 10 to 15 years. So those days, people really started to protect themselves sexually. Even people in marriages were having discussion about sex and whether they were going to have sex unprotected or not. So you push ahead, 40 years later, and what is really happening, they're seeing people like Magic Johnson and other stars and people who are well known who are living well with HIV. I'll never forget in 1986, I believe it was, Essence magazine had a cover that was of a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Black woman. And they said on the top, this is the face of HIV. Someone that you would never, ever believe had HIV. So there was no particular look. So when everybody was talking about they have HIV because get pimples on their face, scabs, scars. That wasn't always the case. Today, that's not the case. And you see a lot more younger people who did not know that experience, who have no relationship to what happened in the early days of HIV, who have gone back to having this unprotected sex again. You know, so you saw an incline, or in the old days, you saw a decline of STDs, now called STIs. Now you see an increase in STIs again. That immediately tells you unprotected sex is occurring. I think that, again, people take advantage of the medical advancements and technology that have been made in America. And I don't think that communication is occurring anymore. We haven't really been talking about HIV anymore. If you think about the global perspective of HIV, while it remains a critical issue because people are maintaining that they are looking for a cure, they're also making money off of HIV drugs. Let's be real. Everything in America stops with the bottom line, and that is the buck. So I don't want to sound, you know, facetious and critical. I'm just telling it like I know it to be. I think that we have to think carefully about the fact that we can find medications. Now we've gone from what, 18 to 20 some odd drugs per day to one drug per day. You can find a medication. If you can go from 18 to 20 something and to one drug a day, my question is, why can't we find a cure all these years later?
This was part one of our interview with Deborah Weeks. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for part two.